Hello, everybody, or should I say good day, mate, given our Australian guest on today's show. Welcome to another episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Happy to have you listening. I'm your host, Neil Horowitz. Always find archived episodes and more content at dsmsports.net and follow me on Twitter at njh287. So as I mentioned, really psyched for today's show. We have Sean Callanan, who is really the sports guru, sports geek, as he's known, does everything digital and social media and sports as a consultant, working with teams across the board in Australia and really around the world, has his finger on the pulse of everything, especially in digital and social and sports. So really just a wealth of knowledge, someone who has seen what teams and fans are doing in Australia, in the UK, in North America, so a really great guy to pick his brain and learn a lot from. But before we get into our interview with Sean Callanan, of course, we have this episode's helpful tool. This episode's helpful tool is one that's especially helpful for individuals, but can also be good for brands as well, and it's called SumAll. One word, SumAll. And what it is, it's a freemium tool. You sign in through a Twitter account, so that can be your brand or your personal Twitter account, and you get some great metrics delivered to your email inbox or right there on the spot about the true reach of your Twitter handle. And that means looking at your mentions, looking at your retweets, looking at people who are replying to you, and looking not just at the quantity of those metrics, but really the actual reach. So basically what we're saying with SumAll is not all mentions and retweets are treated equally, and nor should they be. If you're retweeted by someone every single time you send a tweet out, and they only have 4 followers, well, that retweet isn't getting you too far. But if someone retweets you with hundreds or thousands of followers, or mentions you with hundreds or thousands of followers, that means your tweet is getting that many more impressions, is able to be seen by that many more folks on Twitter. And that's something that Twitter has obviously vacillated with when it comes to delivering impressions. But what SumAll can tell you is this tweet is traveling further and has a potential reach, at least, of going further than these tweets. And you really get a good look. You can look at your trending week to week, day to day. Take a look at which tweets really hit the best, which weeks really did well for you, who is helping you get those large reach metrics, and how can you produce more tweets to get in their attention, or do you want to work directly with someone who may be an influencer in your field? You can also go ahead and try to connect other accounts and get information as well, including a Google Ads account, Facebook Ads account, Google Plus, GitHub. There's really a lot of different options to sync in besides just Twitter, although Twitter is its primary feature. Just a wealth of great data that you can sift through looking at your retweet reach, your mention reach, your replies reach, and how it's trending day to day, week to week. So take a look. I think you'll learn something. I think you'll like it. It becomes a little bit addicting over time to see how you're going week to week. Don't get too addicted to the numbers, of course, but really good way to start to value the actual return on those retweets and those mentions to get a little bit deeper into the Twitter engagement that you're trying to track over time. So check it out, SumAll.com, SumAll.com. Connect your Twitter handle and give it a go. I think you'll like it. All right, that was this episode's helpful tool, SumAll.com. And we'll be right back with our interview on today's episode with Sean Callanan of Sports Geek. All right, that was this episode's helpful tool. It's called SumAll. Not quite as big for brands, but very useful for personal accounts, sort of to track your Twitter reach and your mentions overall from week to week, from day to day, from month to month. And maybe our guest's familiar with SumAll. Sean, are you familiar with SumAll at all?
I have heard of it. I haven't dived in and used it myself. I use a few other tools to sort of keep track of that kind of stuff. But there's definitely a few options out there if you want to keep an eye on on how your accounts are going across the different platforms.
Well, folks, that lovely Australian accent you hear is the voice of our guest. Very pleased, someone I've admired a long time in the sports business and digital sports marketing world is Sean Callanan. He's host of the Sports Geek podcast, runs a consulting, working with several sports teams based out of Australia, but he is an influence in this part of the industry all over the world. And after that that introduction, I just want to say welcome to the podcast, Sean. Thanks for being on.
Thank you very much, Neil, and thank you for the kind introduction.
And we're delighted to talk to Sean today. Going to really get to break down a little bit about what he has learned and seen just from his work all over the world in various capacities in the sports business, especially in digital and social media and sports. But Sean, before we get into the real meat of our conversation, we'd like to get to know all of our guests. You're living the dream. You're working in sports every day, knee deep in a variety of sports. So tell our listeners a little bit about your career path, your background, where you came from, how you came up in the industry, and any tips along the way for folks hoping to emulate you.
I have to be careful. Most of the time now I'm having conversations. I've done so many podcasts. I now, most of my replies are, I've got a podcast for that because I've spoken about it a few times. But, to give you a bit of the Sports Geek prequel or, you know, how I got here. Before I started Sports Geek, I was just a plain old geek. I was in the IT space and sort of worked as a developer over about 15 years, working in variety of different industries: retail, gaming, electricity, in the startup world. But like a lot of your listeners, I'm a massive sports fan. I follow several sports, both over here in Australia. And in the US, you know, I love my NBA and NFL and those kind of things. And as an IT guy, as a coder, I was always disappointed with what was being delivered into the sports market, as, you know, whether it be websites and those kind of things. So I always thought that there was a way to do that better. So when I finished up my last job in the space where I was a coder and developer and running a team for a startup, I sort of thought, well, if I'm never going to do this, you know, I don't want to have regrets later in life. So I pretty much started Sports Geek, I guess, under the guise of being an IT consultant and an expert to sort of help the sports industry to better leverage technology solutions overall.
And Sean, real quick, just to give us some context to where you're coming from, two quick sub questions, I guess, is one is, is the sports media and the sports obsession as big in Australia as it is in the United States, or you know, what we tend to think of as North America overall? And second, is through the numbers, are they as important there? Are people going to websites? Was social networking starting to grow at that point? Or were you kind of entering before most teams had even had websites?
So, yeah, so to give you a bit of a timeline, this was around 2009, 2010 is when I started Sports Geek. Started in 2009. I pretty much spent 9 months telling people that they needed a sports geek, that they needed someone that understood the tech, that understood the sports fan, and that understood the opportunity that was there. And so at that time, you know, things that were happening around the world, things like Shaquille O'Neal getting on Twitter and Twitter getting a bump and becoming mainstream and the media picking it up. Teams were starting to use it, starting to realize that they had these, you know, latent fan bases on Facebook. So what I was doing was investigating the market and seeing that this is where the fans were migrating to. They were migrating to these social platforms. They were moving off, I guess, the darkened web of message boards and forums and that kind of stuff into the light of social. Now, we do know that some of that trollish behavior happens, but, you know, it's a bit more of a public platform. So sort of was a bit of a perfect storm in that I was in that space investigating how teams were using social, whether it be, you know, guys like the Boston Celtics early on, you know, what Pete Stringer was doing there, you know, from a Facebook point of view to what teams were doing with Twitter. So initially it was helping the teams understand that opportunity. On the side of where is sports fandom in Australia compared to wherever else in the world, it's off the charts. I like to, you know, Australia as a country overall are sports mad. And I come from, and I like to wear the badge proudly, from Melbourne. And we like to say this is the sports capital of the world. And I don't say that lightly. But when you look at the amount of sports that are serviced into this, and that are into Melbourne, if I don't stumble over my words, just to give you an idea, there are 9 professional football teams of Aussie rules. There's a rugby team. There's a rugby union team. There's 2 cricket teams. There's 2 football, soccer teams. We also have the Melbourne Cup, which is Australia's version of the Kentucky Derby. And then we have Grand Slam tennis with the Aussie Open. And we have a Formula One Grand Prix. And I've probably forgotten a few more.
And
but
this is all in just Melbourne.
This is just Melbourne. So this is a population of about 3.5 million people. So effectively it's the same as, you know, same size as Seattle. But imagine having 8 NFL teams in Seattle. So, like, that's where the reputation comes from. And we will have, from a crowd's point of view, 3 to 4 football games, Aussie rules games, over a weekend during winter. We're in the middle of the football season. And we will get between 25 and 60 to 70,000 people turning up to those games on a weekly basis. So, like, that's where Melbourne is a really great place to analyse the sports fan, what they're doing and those kind of things, because all the strategies we're applying here can be applied, you know, anywhere else where you've got, an avid fan base.
So where did you start out when you first started Sports Geek? Was it you approaching teams and saying, here's a way to turn all that digital content, all that digital conversation into monetization?
Yes. I mean, when I started, as I said, I was sort of telling people what the best practices were, how teams were using social and the opportunity that was there. But when I started, teams had digital departments, and their digital guy was called their webmaster. It was like one guy that was putting up content. You know, and even that wasn't just the case in Australia. That was the case around the world. You know, Jeremy McPeak from the Phoenix Suns, at that stage, his title was webmaster. I think it was even his Twitter handle at that stage. It was Suns webmaster, and it was really, they were seen as the geeks who were keeping the website up. So you know, I was there telling them, you know, there's a really great way to engage your fans. This is where they want the content. You know, teams were going. So my first couple of clients, it was a bit of a leap of faith. So one of my first clients were the Manly Seagulls in the NRL rugby. And they pretty much gave me a call because their IT guy left and they didn't know what they had on their hands. One of my second clients was Collingwood, which is an AFL team here in Melbourne. And I'm a fan of Collingwood. My great-grandfather played for Collingwood. And I pretty much went to them and said, you've got 50,000 Facebook fans. One, I believe that number is embarrassing because you're Collingwood. Collingwood is a big, big brand and it's a big team. It's like, you know, it's like the Yankees in Australia, in Melbourne. You know, they're hated by everybody else and the fans that love them to death. And so I just went and said, look, guys, that's an embarrassing number for me as a Collingwood fan. And it was, in this case, it was August of the football season. And I said, if you follow what I think you should do and follow some of the best practice, I think we can double that number by the end of the season, which was 6 weeks away. And so 6 weeks later, just by engaging content, proving, you know, showing the correct respect to the platform, not just using it as a go read our article, you know, in that broadcast fashion, right. Engaging the fans, let them be fans on that platform. 6 weeks later, yes, they did win the championship. They won the AFL Grand Final. But the thing is that they provided the fans the opportunity to show their pride in the team and engage in that platform because that's what they wanted to do. So it was a really important case study for me and for Sports Geek to say, look at what we did with Collingwood. Look at the opportunities that are there. Look at the traffic it drove. Look at the positive, sentiment that they drove just by treating the platform correctly and not treating all the platforms the same. So, so from there, I've been working with, multiple teams across multiple sports, both from a training them around social, and now sort of moving back towards building that digital team, building that content presence, and you know that's our focus now, moving towards campaigns to sponsors and things like that.
And when you were looking even back then and even now, at how best to approach a sports team and their situation and how to best to utilize their digital and social assets, are you tending to look around the rest of the world to see what's working with NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, UK with EPL and whatnot, or are you trying to really study the Australian fan, that the NRL fan, the AFL fan, and see what are they doing, and because it may be different from how fans elsewhere are interacting on those networks?
I guess it's a yes and a no to answer that question. I'm always looking at what other teams are doing. But one of the things, I think this is probably where my IT background sort of gave me an advantage of sorts. One, that coming from an IT background and working in multiple industries, I did see a lot of similarities in the industries. Didn't matter what I was building and coding for them, whether it was working for a casino or a retailer or a utilities company, the solutions that were happening in the behind the scenes were the same. They were databases and those kind of things. Mm-hmm. So it didn't blind me to say I'm going to keep studying my market. So I was checking out what the NBA were doing, because they were really early on pushing into social. What some of the teams in the EPL, like Arsenal and Man City, what they were doing, because they were sort of leaders in the space. But I was also looking at, what was working in entertainment overall. So whether it be movies and music and comedians and those kind of things, because to me, the fan itself, whether they're a sports fan in Australia or in the US or the UK, or whether they're a music fan, the fans tend to have the same characteristics. So, again, what the Celtics might do, Collingwood might be able to do as well, because you're targeting your fans and you're targeting that fan avidity. So if a big brand does something with a entertainer, I'm looking at how can we twist that, how can we take that premise and rebadge it around the theme that the team is trying to do. So mm-hmm. I'm always looking at, the World Cup's a good example. All these, the world's best footballers are on show for the World Cup. But the other thing is the world's best marketers are on show for the World Cup. So, when you're looking at these ads and these campaigns that big brands are doing, how can you take the concepts that they're doing and what they're doing and seeing what works well and adapt it for your team, athlete or league?
Oh, certainly. Very good point. And I am curious as to, when you're looking at teams across the board, whether it be different leagues in Australia or around the world, do you see that team structures and really the funnel for revenue streams tends to work in a similar way, where you're trying to get folks to buy tickets, trying to capture their data for better personalized messaging off social networks, activating partners on social media? Does the way teams sort of structure their sales funnels and monetization strategies differ a little bit, or do you see a little bit more consistency with here's how we can strategically approach this content?
I guess it does differ, but it's more about where they are in the stage of, I guess, maturity in that space. A lot of teams, early on it was about getting their digital house in order and producing the content and proving that they had content that the fans want. So that's probably one of our first port of calls with the team to say, okay, what are you producing that the fans like? What are you producing that the fans engage with? And then the third question is, have you monetized that? Have you made that content brand, or have you put some sponsor imagery in that content? And so once you've got a digital team or a content team, doesn't matter what you want to call it, that are developing that kind of stuff, then you can start talking to your sponsorship team on how you go about integrating either the sponsor messaging or their campaigns. And then the other side of it is each team has different goals. So, the West Coast Eagles are in the AFL over in Western Australia. They're working with a full stadium. They've already got a full stadium. They're fully ticketed. So what their strategy is to engage their fans and engage their next generation of fans who might not get a ticket for 5 or 6 years, but they want to keep developing that relationship with. So it's very similar, you know, to what Arsenal are doing. They're looking to engage the whole world because their stadium and the ability to get a ticket is, you know, quite scarce. Mm-hmm. So they're engaging their next market. Whereas it's different for, you know, teams starting out in the Big Bash, like the Sydney Thunder. They started as a franchise, you know, 3 seasons ago that they did not exist before then. So they were starting from the ground up, and so it was real, you know, building the audience, building the avid fans and driving ticket sales. So it sort of depends on the focus of the organization, and then it's a matter of, I guess, the digital team being able to frame both the content that they're producing on their website, but then also their social stuff on, you know, if it's a Melbourne Storm and we're trying to develop our audience in Melbourne. So Melbourne Storm are a rugby team in an AFL, an Aussie rules town. So they're the one rugby team, a rugby league, you know, competing against 9 AFL teams. So their strategy is all about how can we attract these AFL fans to adopt the Storm as like their second team and come to a game. So it's, you know, we're doing a good job of getting them to adopt them digitally. You know, they're liking them on Facebook and they're following them on Twitter and they're showing that they're happy when they're winning. But now it's a matter of how can we convert them? How can we get them to a game and see what how exciting it is live as opposed to on TV?
Oh, I mean, well, very much so. A lot of good points there. I think digital and sports marketers across the world can relate to a lot of those different strategies depending on where your attendance is on a game-to-game basis and what kind of historical footprint you have in a given area. Yep. Are you seeing that – is social media and really the growth of it, does it tend to follow the rest of the world in Australia? Are there any ways where fans are operating differently? Are there platforms that are – that outrank or out-index in that part of the world that you see, or is it fairly similar to what we expect elsewhere with the big players like your Facebooks, your Instagram, and your Twitter really dominating the majority of the content?
Yeah, it's tracking about the same way. Facebook is still, you know, the behemoth as far as the amount of people on it. And the Facebook numbers that everyone's seeing from an increase point of view, if you've been keeping an eye on, I guess, the overall like tallies, a lot of teams wear it as a badge of honor, and I'm not diminishing their numbers. But what we've seen is that Facebook is, I guess, juicing the numbers to a certain degree. There's a lot of extra likes coming to all the teams lately. I think I saw a post by the Warriors where it took them 3 years to reach 2 million and they reached 5 million in the last 6 months. Mm-hmm. You know, we're seeing the same sort of spike from a lot of teams. Obviously, winning helps. You know, we'll get you an increase. But Facebook is really pushing hard and suggesting, you know, the way they've tweaked the news feed, you know, they're suggesting more pages that get mentioned by news organizations. So the more that news organizations mention the Warriors, the more that Facebook would suggest you should like the Warriors on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we've seen all of our teams and leagues graphs, you know, go from a slight incline and continue organic growth to a steeper incline. And that's been pretty consistent across the board. Twitter is in a similar space. It probably is a little bit behind the US as far as, I guess, mainstream penetration. Similar sort of engagement and numbers around major events and live sport. I mean, that's when Twitter is sort of at its best. Mm-hmm. And Instagram, you know, it's pretty much the same around the world. Like, since Facebook bought it's just getting numbers upon numbers of fans jumping on board, and it's really great to engage with the fans that are at the game, you know, sharing those photos and, you know, telling people, becoming those brand ambassadors and showing off that they're at the game and enjoying themselves.
I definitely want to get into that, but before we jump to there, I do want to quickly just ask you about whether the fan expectations in your part of the world differs at all from those elsewhere when it comes to seeing content with a sponsor affixed to it, having to watch a pre-roll video before you see the highlight video, and even just the amount of conversation and engagement that occurs on these platforms. Are fans having the conversation there, or are they viewing the conversation or content there and then conversing elsewhere?
So two part answer to a two part question. The as far as the pre-roll and the sponsored content and that kind of thing, I think fans know that it's a necessary thing that the teams need to do. You know, the sponsorship sort of goes hand in hand. It's a much more open and transparent relationship in Australia than it is in the US, in the fact that we have sponsors on the jerseys, mm-hmm. sponsors on the uniform. So it's, you know, the fans know that it's part of the business of sport these days, and the clubs need that sponsorship for survival. So they're sort of seen to be supporting the sponsors and complicit in those ads.
Are they also just accepting for marketing campaigns from a team themselves? I mean, we talk about ratios like, you know, 9 posts for every 1 ticket sales post, or are fans pretty receptive and open to being targeted with ticket campaigns as well?
Well, so yeah, I mean, that's a balance that you have to manage. You know, if a sponsor just sort of says we want to put up a post with a terrible offer or a competition that's not going to be appealing, it's just not going to work. And you know, a lot of the guys that I work with, you know, put a really high standard on what they're going to deliver to the fans. You know, on the Facebook wall as an example, because they know they don't want to diminish the experience for the fans, and so they're really pushing back to the sponsor to say, if you want to be part of this conversation, and the sponsors do, they see it as a really valuable piece to them, but we're helping them push back to say, well, help us deliver something cool, help us deliver something that the fans want. Otherwise, if you're just, you know, if you're just doing a 25 words or less ho-hum campaign, you will get ho-hum kind of results. So, you know, I think that's where there's also maturity happening from the digital team's point of view and the sponsorship guys knowing that we can't just sort of mail in that type of content. It has to be of a certain level because all the other content that the team is delivering is, you know, is of a high level and the fans love it. So if the sponsors don't bring their A game, then they're not going to get the results they want.
That makes a lot of sense. And actually, just from our conversation right now, it sounds like sponsors really place weight on and value social and digital in Australia even more so than here in the States. It's sort of been an evolving thing for the last, well, really 2, 3, 4 years where sponsors are going from, okay, we'll throw in a couple of social media posts and we have a deal to really starting to build campaigns around not just omnichannel approaches but digital-only approaches as well. Is that an accurate statement? Do you think sponsors do have a unique – or not maybe not a unique, but are they placing proper value on these assets more so than others?
Well, yeah, one of the big things I do is, like, I shut down that kind of – conversation of let's throw in these posts, because if the sponsorship guys and in effect if the team doesn't value their sponsor, you know, their social media channels in that, you know, this is of high value, you are reaching a lot of our fans, and they give it away for free. You know, I always say when you go back to renewal, it's very hard to get an increase from free. You know, you can't double the price of zero, it's still zero. So you know, that's where you've got to show that you value that post, just even internally, by, you know, you've got to decide which of our best articles that we've created this today hits our Facebook page. Like, that's our big audience. It's going to drive traffic. You know, the content team has to decide which one. So they're valuing it from a content point of view. You need to make sure that the sponsors and the sponsorship team realize that as well. And so I think that's, you know, leveraging that once you put out that message and the sponsors start realizing, well, we want to be in your Facebook page because you've got this many fans or we know it really works for our brand, well, you need to make sure you've got value on that. It still comes back to a digital campaign that you're running on your site, and like you said, it's totally integrated and it includes an EDM, and, you know, it might include some, you know, advertising on your site, and it might include some targeted ads that you might run to boost the engagement with that campaign. But it's, you know, it's part of a whole integrated campaign and not just a, oh yes, you know, social is no longer the steak knives of a deal. You know, we're not just throwing it in. Because if you do that, it makes it very hard to say, well, we value our social and our digital because you've just been giving it away.
Oh, very true. Are you also seeing an increased interest in use even of teams in Australia when it comes to utilizing paid social media, whether it's paid Facebook ads or promoted tweets? And are you seeing that as a success short term and long term where you are?
Yeah, definitely around that sponsors space. So, and on the Facebook side of things. So we do a lot of that around, I guess, extending the reach of a sponsorship type campaign. Because it's great to have a Facebook post if it's, you know, if it's well framed and it's well targeted, but it's only going to be there for 2 or 3 hours. Whereas, you know, with some Facebook ads, you can extend that, I guess, that brand recognition and those kind of things, and you do it quite cost effectively. We don't really have the penetration of the market, and I don't think Twitter's promoted products are at the spot that deliver on the results you want at the moment. We've done some testing with it, but it hasn't really given the results that I guess the teams want or sponsors want. And normally they want to drive traffic. They're not that enamored with, you know, lots of retweets, because lots of retweets don't necessarily bring in revenue. But so we have definitely done some, you know, some Facebook ads, you know, and pivoting off some of the data and the custom audience stuff that Facebook's offering.
Okay.
And we're seeing more and more of that.
It sounds like the KPI sort of run the gamut across the board depending on the sponsor or on the team. But are you guys tending to look at impressions overall, at database building, at direct ticket sales, direct sponsor e-commerce? Or what are some of the KPIs that you're tending to use with some of the teams that you work with?
Oh yeah, I mean yes to all of the above of all of those, because it does depend on the goal. You know, if you've got a sponsor that wants that brand awareness and wants the fans to know that they're part of the team, then you are talking about impressions and number of fans that saw the ad and those kind of things. You know, so we've run a Facebook campaign that told the fans to arrive early to get a free donut. Like there wasn't any call to action to click on anything. It was just like turn up early. We're giving away 10,000 donuts. You know, and it's much better to do that with an ad campaign over 7 days than ask the social guy to post it 5 times on your Facebook page. You know, so there's those kind of things. But then we will have ones that will be specific around sales leads and targeting a specific type of fan because they're, you know, they're going to be closer to a, you know, sales action for that sponsor. Or it could be that broad reaching, you know, we want to get more data from our fans and get a better understanding of our fans. So we'll run a competition where it gets some, you know, information of what they like and, you know, their favorite player and those kind of things. So it is a campaign by campaign sort of thing, and it also goes back to what the overall goal of the team is.
No, it makes a lot of sense. I also, before we move ahead, I want to touch briefly a little bit before we move on to this episode's shareable stat. I do want to ask about where do you think teams in Australia are lagging, and where may they be ahead when it comes to what the rest of the world is doing? Are there places where you see clubs in Australia really kicking butt in the digital and social space, and other places where you think that they need to catch up?
Yeah, I think again, coming from the Melbourne market, and Sydney's not much is very similar in the fact it's got a lot of rugby league teams. I think the sponsorship game, like there's it's like blood from a stone type of market because it's so competitive out there to get sponsors. To engage those sponsors with your fans to get those sponsors to renew, like that is super super competitive. So you know what those guys are doing, and then now sort of driving that into digital. You know that's something that I think you know the Australian market's doing a good job of. I still think there's plenty of opportunities to have more things sponsored and do more sponsorship activations, but I think this actual securing of sponsors is pretty top notch. And then the other thing is, I guess is the membership, I guess the membership message, and the culture that sort of exists in Australia. So when I say membership, sort of convert it for your US listeners, you know, it's season ticket holders.
Okay.
And so rather than calling people season ticket holders, from an Australian point of view, everyone is a member. Everyone, you know, is brought into the club and feels like they're part of the club and they're supporting the club. So they're not someone who just buys a ticket and has 11 tickets and has a seat at 11 games.
Mm-hmm.
They're a member of the club, and it's a really big part of, I guess, the marketing message of the football codes, and it's sort of permeated through all the leagues. So the AFL's been doing a big job on that for the last 15 years. The NRL is you know, quickly playing catch up to sort of promote that membership message. It's at a mature stage now where myself as a Collingwood member, and I've been a Collingwood member for near on 10 years now, if I see another fan who is a Collingwood fan, my first question is are you a member? And so it's almost like guilt marketing in that the message has got through to every fan to go, if I become a member, all the money goes to my club, and that's my way of supporting my team. So, you know, it's a real emotion. It's an emotional connection more than a financial connection. Yes, there still are people deciding whether they're going to be a member, you know, based on money and budget, but it's the emotional connection that the clubs have made for someone to say, yes, I'm always going to continue to support my club because that's how, you know, that's what they want me to do. So, you know, that just that from a messaging point of view alone, and that emotional tie sort of moves it away from the ticketing sort of message per se. So everything in Australian sports marketing from a ticketing point of view is to try to get them on that escalator to become a member. So even someone who buys three games, they are a member of the club. You know, they're just as loved as the person who buys an 18-game membership. But the idea is, you know, you want to continue up the escalator to be that, you know, hand over your credit. You know, I joke about it, but you hand over your credit card to your sports team and say, that's okay, you can give it back to me when I die. Like, that's the goal, but it's the emotional connection that sort of disconnects the financial stuff for Australian sports fans.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I think you're starting to see that penetrate a little bit to the North American markets as well. How about a place where Australia may lag a little bit behind their counterparts?
I think it is just, from mine, it's a little bit of resourcing. So the budgets that the Australian teams are playing with are smaller, obviously. There's the models are the same, but the budget's a little bit smaller. And I think because of that, there's a little bit less, I guess, experimentation and risk-taking. You know, American teams will have a little bit of budget. You know, again, not much. It's not like they're splurging and wasting money, but they'll have some budget to do marketing campaigns and pilots and try something. And I think that's where the restrictions of budget, maybe it's a little bit of the risk-taking. The Australian teams don't quite have that opportunity. You know, they would love to do it, but they just don't have the funds to do it. So a lot of it's done, you know, with sweat equity. You know, people working hard, but you know, if they wanted to, they would like to do that Facebook app like some other team did, or that specific mobile app that another team did. You know, that kind of thing, because that takes, you know, budget, developers, those kind of things. If they had that, and that's sort of where that's a space we're sort of helping teams work with to say, That's where we should be pushing sponsorship dollars to say, you know, Adidas did an application with Hawthorn where it was sort of like HawkSpotter, and it was geolocation, and you tagged yourself where you were, and so it became a sponsored club application. That sort of, yeah, it's that experimental budget that's sort of restricting some of the things that they do.
That makes sense. It's sort of the chicken and the egg conundrum, I guess, where you know you have these valuable potential ideas, but in order to show the value, you need to be able to invest in those and experiment a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, before we move on to this episode's charitable stat, there's one more thing I wanted to ask you about. I know it's near and dear to your heart as a current and former geek, and that is looking at the penetration in venues of Wi-Fi and DAS. I mean, we're always talking about people using their mobile devices, second screen penetration, Wi-Fi and venues. What's sort of the state of the union when it comes to the major venues in Australia and the the usage of those networks if they're around?
It's actually tracking pretty well. So you know, I'm involved with the SEEP conference, and so I've sort of been keeping an eye on the whole scene from the time that I started at SEET. So SEET is Sports Entertainment Alliance and Technology, and so I first spoke at that in 2011. And it's the SEET conference started with all the CIOs and CTOs of sports organisations. So in LA in 2011, we actually had a fine system, and every time someone mentioned Wi-Fi and DAS, they had to pay $5. And by the end of the conference, the fine kitty was pretty big, because everyone was looking at that problem. You know, there was only a few teams, you know, I think people like the Giants with AT&T that had rolled something out that was servicing the fans. Sort of fast forward to Kansas City last year, and now SEET not only has the CIOs there, it also has the digital track, which I'm, you know, really proud to lead the steering committee in that space to develop the agenda. And it also has a CRM track with guys like Russell Scabetti driving the CRM track. And last year, you know, we didn't have to have that fine system because Wi-Fi and DAS is something that everyone's rolling out. There's still, you know, still stadiums in the process of rolling out. There are still stadiums that don't have that solution. But it went from it's a problem, how do we do it, to it's, you know, Wi-Fi and DAS is now a utility. You know, you don't, mm-hmm. You know, in the same way that you need concessions and restrooms in stadiums, you need, you know, fans need Wi-Fi. And so Australia is still, you know, Cisco's done a few deals with a few of the major stadiums here. So the SCG had a rollout that was ready for the cricket season this summer and for the Dodgers opening series, Dodgers Diamondbacks games, and the wife, you know, and the solution there was terrific, and the amount of content coming out of the stadium was awesome. So it, you know, the stadiums are getting picked up one by one. The who will pay and how it will be rolled out, that's getting solved. But it's the same sort of process that's been seen in the US market, and it's the same process that's being seen in the UK and in Europe. You know, it's a we know we've got to do it, and it's just a matter of, you know, when. It's a matter of when now, not if.
But it's also very much a club by club, venue by venue sort of task, as opposed to anything happening at a more federal league level.
Yeah, it's very much a venue based decision here. Okay. So the teams don't own stadiums. It's not the same as the US, or they don't have really good relationships with stadiums, if that's another way. Some of the teams have their partnerships with the stadiums. So and a lot of the stadiums are shared. So the MCG, which is Melbourne Cricket Ground, where the cricket and the Australian rules is played, it seats 100,000 fans. That's shared by cricket, and you know, a majority of the Melbourne teams play out of that stadium. We've got ANZ Stadium up in Sydney, and the SCG and Allianz. Multiple sports and multiple teams play out of those. So, so Cisco's done a deal with the SCG and Allianz Stadium, and also ANZ Stadium. So they're all getting Wi-Fi. So that's where it's sort of been a bit of a different. All the teams would love it. Some of the teams have been playing around with pop-up networks. And that kind of stuff. So, you know, coming up with those temporary solutions, but it's an ongoing thing. And I think in the next 2 or 3 years, all the stadiums will be covered in the same way. You know, most of the stadiums will be covered in the US.
Definitely, we'll have a Wi-Fi enabled globe here in no time.
Yeah, exactly. Just get Google to put up those balloons, and then we're all good.
All right. Well, we could really pick Sean's brain all day, but. We'll be right back with him, have a little fun with some quick hitting questions. But first, let's get to this episode's shareable stat. We'll be right back with that.
Well, Well, I don't know about you guys, but I thoroughly enjoyed that conversation with Sean Callanan, and I still have a ton of questions left that I could have asked him. But, of course, we can't keep him here all day. We'll be right back with Sean, have a little fun with him in our Schmooze with Sean segment, get to know our Aussie sports geek a little bit more with some fun, quick-hitting questions. But before that, we have this episode's shareable stat. And this episode's shareable stat comes via the recent Sports Business Journal conference on facilities and tickets. And that comes from the Orlando Magic. Their VP, whose name is Anthony Perez, recently said that they collected 60,000 names for their ticket marketing database simply by offering free Wi-Fi in their arena during the 2013-2014 NBA season. 60,000 new names, 60,000 attending fans who are leads for future game attendance. That is huge and really good for their ticket sales team to get those kinds of names simply from having free Wi-Fi in their arena. A lot of times we get stuck in thinking that, oh, I can't wait till we get Wi-Fi because then we can do all these cool engagement tactics with a mobile app, whether it's in-seat ordering, in-seat upgrades, and in-seat merchandise purchases, or just walking around and being able to push offers. And all those are great ways to monetize Wi-Fi in the arena. But a lot of times what's overlooked is the data capture ability simply from someone using Wi-Fi. They don't have to be using a mobile app that is owned by your team. They can be surfing the net. They can be using any sort of app at all. But simply by signing in to receive that free Wi-Fi, you can capture a pretty good amount of data that you can then use to market to those fans who are at that game and showing their interest in your team, in your product. So go beyond thinking about what Wi-Fi can do for your arena from an engagement perspective and start thinking about what it can do from a data capture perspective. The Magic are a great example of this, as shown by 60,000 names being added to their database. And that really is astounding when you think about 15,000 to 20,000 people attending each game. You are getting 60,000 new leads simply by offering free Wi-Fi, which is something that fans want and also opens up all those other engagement and monetization opportunities. So when you're looking at installing Wi-Fi, which I think every team has either already done or is thinking about doing, think about the return on simply by providing Wi-Fi, whether it's with a mobile app companion or not. You can still get a ton of return simply by collecting fan data and using that to better handle your marketing tactics. All right, that was this episode's shareable stat. 60,000 names collected by the Orlando Magic last season simply by offering free Wi-Fi in the arena. So go ahead, tweet it, share it, post it, talk about it. Great shareable stat, and maybe we'll get a little lesson from Sean about that shareable stat. As we'll be right back with our Schmooze with Sean segment, have a little fun getting to know the sports geek Sean Callanan with some fun, quick hitting questions. We'll be right back with Sean.
All right, that was this episode's shareable stat. Pretty powerful stat that goes right along with our interview today, and that was that the Orlando Magic were able to collect 60,000 names for their database simply by offering free Wi-Fi during the 2013-2014 season. Is that number just astounding to you, Sean, or what do you think about that stat?
Well, that's, you know, they're the kind of stats that you need to justify why you have the Wi-Fi. Like, and that's part of the reason why, you know, you need your tech guys talking to your marketing guys and talking to your CRM guys, because if you don't have that infrastructure in place, you can't get that data.
Oh, such a good point. Being able to really get the CIO and the CMO and everyone in the same room is so important. All righty, let's have some fun. You survived your interview with me, Sean. Are you ready now to schmooze with Sean?
Yeah, no worries.
Let's do it. All right, number one for you. The Australian sport that non-Aussies find the hardest to pick up and the American sport that you found hardest to pick up.
So the Australian sport that non-Aussies find the hardest is easy. That's Australian rules football. I've tried to explain it to a few Americans and people in the UK. It's very hard to cover live and understand it without going to a game. So you can watch it on TV, but if you ever get a chance to watch a game live, it's a tremendous game. The aerobic capacity, the endurance capacity, the high pace collisions, the marks, everything about it, I love it to bits. But it is very hard to get Americans or the English to understand how the game is played. As far as the American sport, hardest to pick up. I reckon Australians love a lot of sports, and we do get it is well covered now, both with all digital options and pay TV. But maybe the NHL. But even then, there's a really strong following of the NHL from a covering a point of view, both the digital options and the fact that we get the games via ESPN, and we've got a pretty passionate ice hockey league. The Australian ice hockey league is going gangbusters, and you just can't get a ticket to the game. But I'd say the NHL is probably the lowest of the US sports as far as what Aussie fans follow.
Oh, very interesting. So there you go, listeners. Your homework is to try to figure out all the rules of Aussie rules football. Good luck.
Yeah, well, if they go to the AFL's website, afl.com.au, you can watch some of the games and see some of the highlights. And they've got a really good, again, from a digital point of view, really good and well-priced digital offering where you can watch the games on your computer.
Oh, very nice. All right, number two for you, Sean. The most popular team and the most popular athlete that are on social media in Australia, and are they good at it?
So the most popular team and athlete. So popular teams. It comes from the history. If we're talking popular, is I guess a relative term. But if you're looking at the most well liked, in the NRL, it's the Brisbane Broncos, who pretty much own the state of Queensland for 20 years. So they've got a whole state behind them. So they've got the most by well in front of most sports teams.
Okay.
But I would say the most popular team currently, if I'm not looking at in club land, it would be the Socceroos, currently in the World Cup, been working with the Football Federation here on what the Socceroos are doing, and I was watching the content and the fan chatter coming through on their first game of the World Cup, and there is a lot of love for the Socceroos coming through. From an athlete point of view, there's a few big athletes, and again, they're the ones that are on the world stage. I think Andrew Bogut is well liked. The NBA's very popular here in Australia. He pulls no punches on Twitter. Tim Cahill, again, one of the players for the Socceroos, plays for Red Bulls in the MLS in New York. An absolute legend, one of only five guys to score in three consecutive World Cups. Even just in the last week, the amount of coverage that Patty Mills from the San Antonio Spurs has gotten has been phenomenal, and I think just the way he puts himself out there on the court, and everyone loves him for his energy, and I think he's providing the same sort of stuff from a social point of view.
So it sounds like, at least from the athlete side, that the ones that transcend Australian borders are really the ones that have the largest following. Is that accurate?
Oh yeah, I mean, we have Shane Warne, who's an Australian cricketer, retired Australian cricketer. He would have a massive following as well, and that's primarily around, I guess, the appeal of the game of cricket in India. So, India is a growing market from a social point of view. Shane Warne is an absolute cricket legend. I don't agree with what he does on social. Sometimes he sending out selfies of yourself in bed early in the morning is probably not something I would be sending out. He's pretty happy with himself, but he gets a large following from India as well.
Oh, always interesting to see what athletes and teams on the other side of the world are doing, and especially the ones that sort of have popularity built in. Are they using that popularity effectively? All right.
Yeah.
We know that the SEAT conference is coming up in July. People may be listening to this hopefully before it happens, but very exciting stuff. I always love following it from year to year, what's coming up in the technology space and sports and entertainment. So I want to ask you, Sean, since you've been a part of a close part of SEAT for a few years now and a speaker there in the past, what ended up being the theme of last year's SEAT conference? And for this year's SEAT conference, what do you think the theme arising out of it will be?
So I reckon last year's theme was data or data, depending on which part of the world you're from.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was a real strong focus. I really think the CRM guys sort of, I guess, stepped up and really became a, not that they weren't, but really became they went all in on seat. And so the discussions that they were having, and also both in the in the sessions that they had, and in around some of the keynotes, like that was really big. So things like you said there with the Orlando Magic and the Wi-Fi, like those were the conversations that were happening. Mm-hmm. I feel this one's going to be really based around content for mine, especially from the digital point of view, and this concept of native advertising, which is the current buzzword in the advertising game, which I think sports have been doing for a while. And native advertising is integrating a sponsorship message into your content. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of teams doing that really well, and I think that's sort of going to be a bit of a theme sort of coming through. It's going to be great to have guys like Rich Clark from Arsenal talking about the content side of what the Arsenal business is and why that's so important to them. So I'll be, I think content's going to be a big thing. I'm actually calling for people to send me in their best and brightest. I'm going to profile the best and brightest content and sponsorship campaigns around the world. So whether you work for a team or whether you're a fan of a team and you've loved a specific, video series or an article series or a, or an infographics that have been done. I've got a stack of stuff to choose from, but I'd really love to, hear from your listeners. They can send me an email, Sean@sportsgeekhq.com, and I'll look at those type of campaigns. But I think content's going to be, a real big theme. So follow at Seat Conference and Seat 2014. That'll be where the content is. And if you can make your way down to Miami, it's going to be. It's going to be one of the biggest conferences yet.
Excellent. And for more information, you can go to the Seat website as well.
Yep. I've got a link off my site. So if you go to sportsgeekhq.com/seat2014, that'll take you to the Seat website. And you can see the agenda. You can see the speakers and that kind of stuff. And really good group of people.
Very cool. And that's coming up in mid-July for all of our listeners, or July 10th and 11th, Sean?
No, later in the month. It is 19th to the 21st.
Gotcha. Oh, so listeners have plenty of time to get involved. All right, number four for you, Sean. This one is one I'm looking forward to. The best food at a sports game you've had in Australia and the best food you've had somewhere else around the world at a sporting event.
Yeah, so the best food, I pretty much can't go past the humble meat pie sauce. It's a football tradition. So the 4 and 20 meat pie is a classic at sports games in Australia. So I might be known to have one or two of those when I'm at a football game. As far as somewhere else around the world, I'd have to go back many years ago. I went to I was in Denver for a game where the Colorado Buffs play CSU in their preseason game, college football. I was at a tailgate, and I had one of the best pulled pork rolls that I've ever had in my life at the tailgate at like 7:30 in the morning. I think it was 11 o'clock Australian time, so my body clock hadn't adjusted. The tailgate experience overall was very memorable.
Oh, I love it. I was speaking of memorable experiences. How about the most unique sports or sports team tradition in Australia?
So one of the things that happens in both the AFL and the NRL is that all the teams have a team song. And so when the team wins, all the players in the room will stand arm in arm and sing the team song. And all the fans around the stadium will sing the team song. I don't see it anywhere else in the world. And if you're, if you're watching it to watch, grown hulking men standing arm in arm singing a song, it does look a little bit strange, but it is definitely a tradition in Australian sport.
Oh, I love that. That sounds awesome. I would love to see some teams adopt that in North America.
it is good. I'll try to find it. You should be able to find some clips of it. Is one of the things, if the TV coverage leaves and doesn't show the team singing the team song, social media and the phone lines at the TV station completely light up. So
oh,
yeah, it shouldn't be too hard finding a team singing the team song.
That's awesome. All right, one last bonus question for you, and that is, who is the most well-known athlete overall in Australia, and this can be worldwide, and who's the best-known American athlete?
So you could probably – I'm going to go – the two guys I'm going to answer could be interchangeable. Cristiano Ronaldo, Real Madrid striker, all over – you know, obviously all over. We love our soccer or football over here, and he is everywhere. I mean, both from a brand point of view. I was lucky enough to see him when I was recently in Europe. And then I guess the guy from an American point of view, which again, you know, would be LeBron James, you know, King James. Been watching the NBA finals, you know, multiple MVP. The NBA is a massive, massive product. The most league pass subscribers outside the US is from Australia. So, you know, wow. The NBA is a big, big market over here. So LeBron would be, yeah, right up there, both from a love and a hate. It's consistent with everything that's happening in the States.
Naturally. That's fascinating. All right, Sean, you survived your Schmooze with Sean segment. It's your chance now to give your social media all-star to follow, someone on Twitter, a blog, or wherever, who they are and why they're worth following.
So I'm gonna pump up the tires of a mate of mine, Shane Harmon, at Shane Harmon. He used to work – he's at the Rugby World Cup in New Zealand, and he's bounced around, very smart sports biz operator. He's now the CEO of Westpac Stadium over in Wellington. Yeah, so follow Shane if you ever want any good content. He's always on top of everything sports biz, and he's actually got a pretty switched on Flipboard magazine. So he flips pretty much everything that he's reading into his Flipboard magazine. He's inspired me to start my own Flipboard magazine, just to push some content through, because I've been finding and using that more and more, thanks to Shane. So yeah, I'd say give Shane a follow. I'm sure a lot of your listeners already do. He's really active out on Twitter around sports biz.
I can attest to that. I follow Shane myself, and he is definitely a good follow on Twitter and elsewhere. All right, Sean, how about yourself? Where can we find you, Sports Geek? I know your two podcasts, both Sports Geek and Beers, Blokes, and Biz. Just give us a quick rundown of your presence out there.
Sean Callanan on Twitter and at Sports Geek on Twitter. Same on Facebook. The two podcasts, Sports Geek podcast, is available on iTunes and Stitcher and SoundCloud. You know, very happy just to recently put out episode 50. You know, so I've had some really great guests on that. You can go to sportsgeekhq.com/SGP to find out all the back catalogue and find out how to subscribe. And yeah, my other project, Beers, Blokes and Business, which is my excuse to catch up with my mates to talk about business over a few beers. We sort of talk about marketing and running our own businesses. We're all small business owners effectively. We've been really pleased with the feedback and you know, a little bit surprised and humbled. It's one of the number one business podcasts in Australia, and it's just, again, as I said, it's an excuse for me to catch up with my mates to have a beer. But it's been, yeah, it's been really fun doing it. So that's pretty much me. You know, if you really want to find anything else about me, you can go to, you know, SeanCallinan.com. But pretty much, you know, hopefully you put in Sports Geek and you find me, then I've done my job right.
That's great. And for anyone listening, if you're not currently listening or familiar with the Sports Geek podcast, well, stop what you're doing and subscribe. Go listen to every episode you can right now. It is an incredible resource for you. But, Sean, we can really pick your brain all day. You've been a fantastic guest on the podcast. Cannot thank you enough for giving us some of your time over there on the other side of the world. And we're delighted to continue to learn from you on your podcast and hear from you at SEAT and keep up with everything you're doing. So, yeah, thanks again for being on the podcast, Sean.
No worries. And like I said, if anyone, you can follow the podcast, I'd appreciate it. And, you know, one of the things that I do is all the content I'm sharing, I actually use, I guess, everyone's clicks and retweets as a way to curate our newsletter. So if you want to sign up for the newsletter and get the latest of what everyone else is clicking on of what the stuff I've shared, you can sign up for Sports Geek News by going to sportsgeekhq.com/signup now, and then you'll be across what we're up to.
Great, and for any listeners, we'll have some of that in the show recap deck as well. Well, thanks again, Sean, and best of luck to your Socceroos in the World Cup. Hope to see both them and the States advance.
Cheers, mate.
Thank you so much again to Sean Callanan of Sports Geek and Sports Geek Podcast. Really a wealth of knowledge in this space, someone who keeps track of all the trends and what fans are doing, what's happening in the tech side of it, marketing side. Just a really great guy. I really enjoy talking to him, and someone who's been an inspiration to me for a while, and I recommend everyone follows him, listen to his podcast as well. But that'll do it for this episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Looking forward to having you back listening to another episode. You can always find archived shows and more content at dsmsports.net. And follow me, your host, Neil Horwitz, on Twitter at NJH287. Always looking for any and all feedback. All right, we'll see you guys next time. Thanks for listening to the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast.